Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Christopher Dodge. Christopher is currently the principal of the Orange Elementary Schools in Orange, Massachusetts, serving 500 students in grades pre-K through 6. He began his career as a grade 5 and 6 educator in Petersham, Massachusetts. Christopher's passion as an educator included differentiating mathematics instruction for all students. Christopher is an advocate for adult and student social emotional well-being and the impact it has on student achievement. Under his leadership, the Dexter Park Innovation School has moved to an inclusion school, servicing students through a co-teaching model of instruction, and most presented his work at the National Association for Elementary School Principals, NAESP, Summer Conference in Philadelphia. Christopher has served on the board of directors at the Elementary Committee Chairman for the Massachusetts School Administrators Association, MSAA. He most recently served on the Commissioner's Teaching and Learning Subcommittee for Reopening Schools. He is a connected educator who utilizes his social media to make family and community connections and is passionate about educators using social media as a form of ongoing personalized professional development. He is the coordinator of EdCamp NQ in Orange, Massachusetts. Welcome to the podcast, Christopher.
Thanks, Dana. Appreciate you having me.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Yeah, sure. So as I was thinking about this, I was thinking about, I guess, myself as a learner growing up in the public schools. I have grown up in this area of Massachusetts my whole life. And as I got older and got into the field and really getting into being an educator, I really found my passion. And I'm doing that now currently, even as a principal. And I think when I was thinking about being in the trenches, I've been able to reflect on my life as a learner growing up in the public schools and thinking, would it be different if I had grown up under different circumstances in the public schools? So meaning I was a very good student. I got good grades. I graduated towards the top of my class. But in reflection and looking back, I think I knew how to play the game of school. I was taught how to pass the tests. I knew how to do well and get the good grades, but I can't honestly say that I was an engaged learner. I did what I had to do to get by. And I love the social part of school. I love being with my friends, and playing sports was a big part of my life growing up. But I didn't really know myself as a learner or find my passion or what I wanted to do until later in life. And I guess now that I look back, I think to myself, what could school have been different, or how could it have been different for a student like me? Because that was a missed opportunity. And I feel like we do a good job in teaching kids to play the game and do the right things. But I think what we miss is at the core of this, are we teaching kids to love the act of learning and pursue their passions and be driven by that? So I found that later in life, luckily. I just wonder sometimes, was I just lucky? And what about all those other people that don't find their passion? And could we do that? Should that be part of our work before they get to that age?
I think that's so inspiring that, you know, you're able to think back on those missed opportunities, right? Reflecting, that's the best thing we can do as educators, is reflect on how we were as a student, and maybe, you know, putting ourselves as a youngster in the situation of these current students that we are working with, right? And you know, education looked a lot differently when we were in school, but just kind of thinking about, what can we do to engage those students? I really liked how you added, helping those kids find their passion. And I think that leads into what we discussed in the pre-chat was a lot about personalized learning and how in Massachusetts, you're kind of striving to, they're bringing that more and more into schools. As a district, you've been moving more to personalized learning, especially this year with classes being remote. So tell me a little bit about your experience and how that shifted at your school.
So, when I talk about my past, I don't put blame on any educator or system. I really think a lot of what we do is driven by systems that are, dictate how we, the things we have to do. So a lot of that is, created by, government systems, oversight, we're largely, dictated by that because we're held accountable by it. And, there's certain things we have to follow. One thing I saw happen though in March was the system kind of blow up, in the fact that COVID happened. We closed down on March 13th and no one knew what to do. And what I thought was interesting was we were in this space of really having no real oversight rules. We just kind of said, all right, we're going to make the best of this. And it, to be honest, it felt kind of good to have that freedom. Mm-hmm. And we've been talking a lot about personalized learning, at least in my school and with the leaders that I connect with. We're always talking about personalized learning, passion-driven learning. How can we do this? But we only get so far because at the end of the day, the system doesn't support the shifts that we might want to make. And so I'm really hoping now that we can utilize this opportunity. My district is in remote learning currently, and I'm really hoping, if nothing else, we come out of this with some practices that are more personalized, because we've had to. Right now, we have to really think about every kid and where they are and how are we going to move them along, and how are we going to meet them, meet their parents and their families, and figure out how are we going to make this work together. So there is a real personalized approach. And I think our teachers are doing a rock star job at it and really building these strong relationships. I just hope that at the end of this, we're able to capture and preserve those practices that we've been so long talking about, but just haven't been able to get implemented in a more cohesive or robust way. And so in our district, because we're remote, we've developed what's called a remote learning plan for our students. That's a personalized learning plan. So our teachers meet with the families, and the first contact they have with our parents this year in August was one of support, mm-hmm. and one of how can we help you make this work in your home? Because we understand that every family is different. Every household is different. There's different dynamics. There's different challenges. And so I really wanted our teachers to have that first contact be one of support and grace, not here's the expectations for you, please follow them. So we did that to start. And now what we are doing is for kids that might not be as engaged, we're really trying to design these plans that say, okay, our plan that we've designed is not working for you. Mm-hmm. How can we make this work? So it could be, we're going to work together with the family to decide first, what is the obstacle? Is it an internet issue? Is it a device issue? Is it the family just is working and can't help their child? How can we provide opportunities for your student to still be engaged? But not maybe the way we've envisioned it. Mm-hmm. So we really are working with families. And so it's us working together in collaboration, but also we're still holding that bar high for families to say, okay, maybe math at 10:30 isn't working. How can we make it work? Maybe we provide some opportunities that aren't live. They don't have to join their class. They still have to do the work. And so we're really thinking differently about school and how we operate. And that's, I think, a big piece of this is we have this tendency to go back to what we knew. And that just can't be a thing for leaders or teachers. We have to think so far outside the box, which is exciting, but also a lot of problem solving.
And that's definitely something that it sounds like you guys took the right approach in the summer, and having those parents kind of tell you what is their specific situation, right? Who's going to be home with the kids during the day? You know, what, how many, you know, students in the family actually have a device? How many students need a device, right? And also, I think the sleep schedules really play a big part with these kids, and the age as well. Being a parent of a kindergartner and a fifth grader, you know, I know that my kindergartner, you know, he's up a lot earlier than my fifth grader. And, you know, and we were talking in the pre-chat about my fifth grader is now going to remote for, you know, at least for the time before Christmas break, and just how, you know, they're kind of doing classes at the regular time, right? The 8:30 to the 3 with, you know, some breaks in between, but, you know, that doesn't work necessarily for, like you said, a lot of kids. And at your school, you were saying they have some access to content during the 8 to 1 school day, and then there's more individualized time. And is that time where the specialist, you know, reading intervention may occur, or people can, you know, the students can jump on those Google Meets with some of the one-on-one instruction. So what does the rest of the school day look like? And is there a lot of both asynchronous and synchronous?
So, yes to all of that. We are, our teachers are done at 1 o'clock, and we did that intentionally because we wanted, or I wanted to make sure that we had common planning and PLC time in the schedule, and it was built in so that everyone could collaborate and work together. We do have paraprofessionals that are available from 1 till the end of the day. We're using them to do some check-ins with kids and families. To they're running some intervention groups for kids that might need that, according to some of our assessment data. We are providing, I've asked the teachers to really make sure that whatever they provide synchronously, they also provide opportunities asynchronously. But not to give teachers more work to do. So we said to them, you can record your Google Meets. You can, we've also invested in some programs that do that for us. So when thinking about our math and literacy program, we went out and looked for tools and programs that would not give a teacher more videos to record. They are already built in. So ways that we can just post those to our Google Classrooms so that kids can interact when it's right for them. Now, I would pair that by saying we're really closely monitoring student progress through those programs, because we want to make sure that there are ways in which we can intervene quickly if a family or a student is not engaged. So we have lots of ways that our teachers can reach out to the deans and myself to say, I have this kid and I'm concerned. And we meet on them weekly, and we talk about kids, and we talk about, okay, where is the student engaging? Where are the gaps? How can we fill the gaps? We're also implementing, pretty excited, next week we're implementing something called our Remote Learning Academy, which is, we have a handful of students that have not been engaged. We've tried some interventions and supports. They've been unsuccessful. So what we're going to do is bring them in for a short period of time, a temporary, it's a temporary kind of stay. They come, we give them the tools they need to be a remote learner, and then we send them on their way. So they're not in person forever. It's not a life sentence. It's okay, you're going to come into our Remote Learning Academy. You're going to learn the skills and strategies that you need to be independent. And then you're going to graduate from the Remote Learning Academy, and you're going to be a remote learner again. So one of the things we want to make sure that we do, and it's been one of the fears of mine, is we do have students that are in person 5 days a week, our high need students, our sub separate programs. One thing we might miss in that is giving them the skills if we do at some point close buildings like we did in March. I want to make sure that our students are getting what they need to be independent learners. So we're really talking about each student individually and assessing the roadblocks and making sure that we then fill those needs and then say to the family, here's what we did with your child. Here's the skills and the the strategies we taught them. Here are some of the visuals that we made and some of the things that we worked with them to help them. And here's where you can help too. So here's some of the things you might see. So it's really more of a, it's a network of people that we're trying to help, because we understand too that parents don't always have the skills to be able to help their child in remote learning. And we need to help them just as much as we help the student.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's a great opportunity to, you know, bring in those small group of kids. And about how many kids are coming into that academy, would you say?
So next week we are bringing in, I would guess between, I have two schools. We have a pre-K to two school and a 3 to 6. I would guess we capped it at 10. But we didn't really have to cap that. We just thought that'd be a reasonable number. And actually, I think we're right around that in both schools of the number of kids that teachers submitted to us for students who might benefit from that. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do a 4 to 6 week cycle.
Okay.
And make decisions about, you know, is the student ready to move on? Should we keep them for another period of time? And just making sure that we're making decisions based on every individual student, mm-hmm. and not making real blanket, like this is this group of students and they're now in forever. Because I do want us to take the time to really get to understand their challenges and make sure that we want them to feel good about, hey, you did this and now you can be at home and do this. So really making it kind of a celebratory thing at the end too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, you're taking a difficult situation and working with it to the best of you all's ability in that, you know, system where, you know, we are able to bring in small groups of kids and, you know, work mm-hmm. with kids and then identifying what are their needs. And I, you know, when you first talked about that, it kind of made me think of the AVID model, right? That a lot of kids get in middle school and in often mm-hmm. in ninth grade and, you know, kind of taking that down to the elementary level, because a lot of it does have to do with those organizational skills and you know,
metacognition. Yeah.
Yeah. Right place, right?
and I, you know, I think we sometimes miss that mm-hmm. and we assume kids have, I think you and I had talked about this in the pre-chat, like we sometimes assume that kids have skills that even adults struggle with. Yeah. And then we get frustrated or we say, oh, well, this kid can't do it. They can, we just have to teach them. Mm-hmm. And why do we assume that kids know how to be a remote learner when we've never done this before? Mm-hmm. The adults are still trying to figure out. So it's really taking that approach of saying, okay, let's not, it would be easier to just make other decisions about how we do this. But I think the real benefit is let's teach these kids some important skills that are going to be helpful to them as a lifelong learner, mm-hmm. because our kids are going to need, this is going to be in some way, shape or form, they're going to have to know how to be a learner in this environment for the rest of their life. Really. I think schools is just going to have some form of this in some way, shape, you know, like there's going to be some version of online schooling forever now. So we have to teach them that.
Yeah. No, I think that's really important to, you know, be able to kind of send them on their way with that, those tools and, mm-hmm. you know, check in and make sure that they're using those on a daily basis after that cycle. And then, yeah, like you said, I envision even before the pandemic hit, you know, I saw a lot of upper elementary grades doing some, you know, form of just that, using a lot of things on Google Classroom when teachers might have been absent and more, you know, independent type work. But I think that's going to be, you know, kind of throughout the grades and, you know, and having kind of those hybrid or flipped classroom models,
right?
When we do all, hopefully in the fall, make it back to the building. But I think using the time that you're actually in person with a teacher to, you know, have that direct instruction and have that group work with your peer, but having maybe those moments where the teacher does have videotaped lessons outside. That's such an old word, the videotaped lessons, right? Videotaped. Yeah. But yeah, we're from that era, yeah. As when we had to set up those cameras and actually hit record on the video camera.
Yeah, and it's really shifted like how we see ourselves as educators, right? Like I don't have to be the person. I don't have to be the stand and deliver teacher. Kids can get content anywhere at any time. Mm-hmm. Now you're a facilitator.
Yeah.
You have this group of kids and you're saying, okay, I have some kids that are here and some that are here. How am I going to move them all along? Mm-hmm. How am I going to, you know, remove potential roadblocks for them and really help them, you know, exceed their, and I think that out of all of this, I'm hopeful that it's going to shift how we think about ourselves as educators and what our role is. Cause I think we've talked about that a lot, at least, or, you know, in my part of the woods, but haven't really seen it in action until this. So now I do see that. And sometimes that just happens when the rug is pulled from under you and you don't have anywhere else to go.
Oh yeah, no. And I remember reading that. I think it's Jonathan Bergstrom who wrote The Flipped Classroom. Mm. I remember reading it over winter break. Must have been about 8 years ago, right? And I was still teaching, and you know, I was thinking, and I was teaching high school French, and I was I kind of reached out to my administrator and thought, okay, you know, how about I try this? And she said, well, reach out to, you know, somebody in the building's using this. And it didn't really, you know, I didn't really go any further with that. It just kind of, it picked my interest, right? And, and just kind of the model they had in the school that they wrote about. And I think, you know, like you said, there's a lot of people who've been reading about different ways of teaching and different ways of students learning that now, you know, we're trying a lot of different things. And I think there's going to be a lot of studies at the end of the school year to see what works. And, you know, what I would like is more of a consistent, right, decision, maybe across a district or across a state.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we discussed in the pre-chat is a little frustrating when it comes to kind of everybody's on their own, right? And it's even
at the
school level.
Yeah. I mean, we, I'm sure like many states, mm-hmm. it was kind of a decision by the local school committees to decide based on your data, you know, what's the model you want to start with. We had to present our three plans. And I don't live in the community I work in. So I'm looking at this from, you know, an educator perspective, but also a parent perspective, mm-hmm. and saying, okay, this is really hard for a family if you work in our district, but also have kids in another district. If we're not all aligned mm-hmm. in how we're kind of doing this, it's going to create a lot of complications and confusion, really, because in my house, I have, you know, my wife and I are both, you know, we both have jobs. I also have three sons. Mm-hmm. And I was concerned myself, and I know my staff were too, about, okay, so if we use this model, but our kids' model is this, how are we going to make that work?
Yeah.
So when I was thinking about the personalized learning plan, I was really thinking about what would I want my own sons to go through? What would I want their school district to do? Because one of the things I was thinking about was, man, if they tell me that my son has to show up at this time on these days, we'll try to make it work. But I don't know how reasonable that is for us considering our work schedules. And my in-laws and my mom watch our kids a couple days a week. Is it reasonable to then ask them to help my son when that's not what they're there for? Mm-hmm. And nor do I want to ask them to help Gavin get into his Google Meet. And so it really raised a lot of questions for my wife and I. And then I was, you know, thinking about our population and thinking, there's got to be a different way to do this. There's got to be a different way to engage families and kids, mm-hmm. rather than these are the expectations. And these all or nothing, or, you know, one size fits all models is what we used to do. And again, this is not what we used to do, nor should we be trying to make it what we used to do. And so it's really been thinking outside of that and saying, okay, here's what we can offer you. And here's what it's going to look like. How does this work for you? And if there's things that don't work, how can we work together to still make sure it happens? Because we did hear in March that families were saying, well, it was kind of like optional learning. We kind of offered a lot of stuff, but there wasn't any like, you know, you need to be doing X, Y, and Z. So we're kind of pairing the let's engage and talk about it with some higher expectations for kids, but the two aren't mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think, you know, to say we're using this personalized learning approach doesn't mean learning is optional. It mm-hmm. just means we're going to do a better job of meeting you in the middle to make sure it does work. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, we're going to intervene because we're not, you know, this year is different and we want it to go well, but we need that parent engagement to say, like, we need to hear how this looks in your house. What are the challenges? How can we help you with that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's so important to, you know, open that up for the parents to, you know, explain how is it working for you? Right. And mm-hmm. Have you had like some town halls or some like sort of PTA meetings, and how often do you have those?
So I had a pretty large size reopening committee that met over the summer with staff. It had members of my school council, PTO, school committee. So there was a lot of people kind of wrapping our heads around this and what it could look like. We also, you know, looked at survey data from parents. We're still doing that. In fact, we know now there's things we might want to do to refine the remote learning experience. And we're kind of digging into that a little bit. And our next step is also looking at the hybrid plan that we wrote in the summer. I think we could do a better job of, we need to look at that one again as well. So I guess it's really an ongoing process of making sure that we engage with all these different stakeholder groups and hear from them. And I would say our last school council meeting, we looked at some feedback data from parents, and I think overall they feel very supported. They feel like we're listening to them, that we're not doing this to them, but we're doing it with them. And I think that's just a big piece of the puzzle, is having them feel like we're not here. We don't want to make this harder for you than it already is. This whole thing is hard. It's hard for everyone. Your household is stressful, you know, if you're trying to, if you have multiple kids and you're trying to make this work in your home. And we're certainly not here to add stress to you. We want to make this as a positive experience as it can be.
Yeah. And I think just continuing with those surveys, the data collection, mm-hmm. I think in these times you can't survey people too much, and you know, not everybody answers. I'm usually the person that'll answer the survey when I get it, but you know, I remember where I work, we, you know, surveyed a lot of people, you know, at the end of the spring remote learning, and mm-hmm. and then, you know, I think the district, right before they decided to do a hybrid model, they surveyed, you know, I think it was sometime beginning of July, and you know, how many people want to do hybrid, how many people want to do 5 days a week in person, etc. But you know, they haven't done any surveys since, like with the hybrid, with, we had 5 days a week with the kids K-6 in person, but you know, they didn't do any surveys like how has it looked for you with the groups of kids that have had to quarantine, mm-hmm. you know, and those type of things. So I think it's something that is a tool that should be used in all districts. You know, I know, like you said, Massachusetts is pretty much, it's that local control, and mm-hmm. very much so in Colorado as well, even though a lot of people are mirroring what the neighboring district does.
Right. Right? And I'm trying to also watch our neighbors around us too, to learn from them. I want to know, because even in our own district, we have one school that's hybrid. Two of the mm-hmm. schools are remote because they have, we're a consolidated district. We're not regionalized. So they have their own school committees. So it's been interesting to really listen and watch the other districts around us who have done things. And really, I'm hoping that we can learn from them. One of the things that I had was talking to a friend of mine who's involved with the National Principals Association, was saying, like, there's schools out on the West Coast that are going to start this before we do. Mm-hmm. So are there ways in which we can learn from them and say, what would you continue doing? What would you stop immediately? What would you do differently if you were to do this all over again? Because I think there's just, where we're all just kind of flying by the seat of our pants, it's so important that we look around and say, okay, I like what that school's doing. Mm-hmm. What can we borrow from those other leaders and schools that are doing this work, and talking to our teachers who have kids in their own district, saying, mm-hmm. you know what, my son's district or my daughter's district does this, it's not working for us, mm-hmm. But they do this, and this is really a positive thing. So although really focused in the work that we're currently doing, I think it's really important that I keep my eyes and ears open around us too, because I, at the end of the day, I just want to make the best of the best possible solution to, this thing that we're that's not ideal. I mean, it's just, it is what it is, and everyone's doing the best they can with it, but it's just everything's so new and we're constantly learning. But the more I can steal from other schools and leaders, I'm happy to do.
Yeah. And I think it boils down to, you can't operate in a silo.
Right.
In exactly. This situation, right. Everybody needs to learn from each other and,
right.
Collaborate on what works and what hasn't worked. And, everybody should be transparent in, either their board meetings or just communications out to families. And, I think that's the big learning process this year. And that takes us a little bit to the evaluation conversation we had in the pre-chat. And you're on the principal's advisory committee. I mentioned in the bio, the advisory cabinet. Let's talk a little bit first about just kind of the formative coaching that you've been using this year. We talked a little bit about the Danielson framework for remote learning and the walkthroughs and kind of how that's looked for you. And, you said, obviously, we're not going to use this year as a gotcha year for teachers, right?
Yeah.
And then, let's talk. And then at the end, we'll talk a little bit about what you envision that evaluation tool to maybe change in the, how we can make it better for, when we do more formal evaluations.
So our state is still continuing with evaluations, or at least our district. Though I was talking with a colleague yesterday who their district made the decision to postpone evaluations for the year. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I agree with that. I think we can't pretend as leaders that we have anything to add to a teacher's toolbox other than things we've already seen from other teachers, right? Mm-hmm. So I can't pretend for a minute that I can fully understand what my teachers are living right now and what they're being asked to do. So for me to evaluate something like this is just, it's just not fair. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking a lot about how can I use this opportunity as a learning opportunity and to have really important conversations with teachers. I've been using Danielson has a remote framework for remote learning, which is great. And if you go on their website, they have all kinds of free stuff. And my deans and I once a week visit classrooms virtually. Mm-hmm. And we look for evidence of things that we would potentially want to share to other staff members or just to ask an honest question. So we every Wednesday visit some classrooms and then we have a document where we list all the things we saw in line with that, whatever we were looking for. So recently it's been learning environment. So the question is what are teachers doing to build community and routines in the remote learning experience? So we look for evidence of that. We have really nice conversations about things we saw and then things we're wondering. Mm-hmm. And we follow that up by, talking with the teacher and sharing the document and saying, here's what we saw. More to reaffirm what they're doing, because we know that they're just so vulnerable right now. They're doing something that they've never done before, and it's not easy to have your administrator in your classroom. We've tried to say to them, we're here to learn from you because we are the ones who are advocating for you. And unless we know what your experience is, we can't, how can we make decisions on your behalf? And so it's really been like a nice way to reflect and really push practice a little bit to say, hey, we saw this, we're just wondering, and then just have a nice conversation. And it's also allowed me to play with some pretty cool tech tools that I've seen my teachers using. So we've been using this tool called Mote, M-O-T-E, which is an extension where you can leave voice feedback in a Google Doc.
Okay.
Because one of the things I was missing was I'm just sharing this document with you. I might never get to have the conversation with you. And I think hearing my voice just adds another layer of it's a personalized approach. And I've seen teachers doing that with their kids. Cause it's just nice to hear your teacher's voice and to say, hey, I was reading your writing and here's something I saw, one thing you might want to think about. So really, it's allowed me to really get into some of the tools that my teachers are using so that they feel like I'm part of this. I'm here with you, not, again, I'm not doing this to you. I'm here to help you mm-hmm. and have these conversations. So it's really been more of a formative kind of process for us mm-hmm. And really getting to learn about what our teacher's experience is.
Yeah. And I think that's such a great approach to take. And, you know, you're learning to use the tools that they're learning. You know, you're having those reflective conversations. And like you said, it's more of just that full circle of learning from each other rather than you being the expert, because definitely, you know, that's not the case right now. You've never taught remotely, and, you know, we're expecting what they're doing and how they're, you know, how they're managing their classrooms and their the work that they're doing with kids. So, you know, I think that's great. And how are you planning on like, what do you see this maybe kind of going into next school year, maybe for district or state level evaluations? What would you like that to look like as you know, maybe states decide to take on a new framework?
Yeah, I mean, for us, I've actually really, I think our evaluation framework is pretty strong. I think there's some revision. I think it could use some updating because it's been a while, but I like the idea behind I like the framework. So there's a rubric with four standards and the teacher's goal set, and they collect evidence, which I love. It's a better, more robust, holistic approach to the evaluation cycle. And I do think, you know, it's quality. It's better than anything we've had. Mm-hmm. I think what we could do a better job of is making sure that there's understanding amongst leaders of mm-hmm. how it's being used. And because really the goal is for growth. We want everyone to move along wherever they are. So it can be used in a more personalized way to really have conversations with teachers and say, here's where you are right now. Here's your next step. How does the district, how are we going to help you get there? I just don't know that there is a lot of uniformity in how it looks across districts. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I was just a new principal when it came out, and it was just kind of given to us. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's an opportunity there to make sure it's being used for the right reasons and that principals are kind of in line with this is what it's, here's how you can use it to really promote growth with staff. And then at the end of the day, it comes down to time. It's a lot to do for a leader. There's a lot, you know, you got the evaluations and the paperwork and the observations, and that is a lot. And, I don't know, I've tried every which way to make it work for me, and it always comes down to just the time aspect of it. So if there was a way to think about timelines and expectations to make it more user-friendly for the principal. I know, like, in a typical year, May comes and I'm coordinating MCAS testing mm-hmm. and trying to meet with teachers to do their summative evaluations. And it's just not doable. mm-hmm. And so I think timeline and making sure that, like, are we really, if the core of the system is teacher growth and promoting growth, let's make sure that that's how it's being used and making sure that the principal has time to promote growth and not fill out forms. Because I think sometimes when things are given to you, it becomes just a compliance. I'm just trying to check off the boxes. And I don't believe that that changes educator practice. It just mm-hmm. becomes a, what do I have to do to get this submitted?
Yeah. And I think that's kind of been the issue, you know, ongoing. You know, I did the principal licensure program about 10 mm-hmm. years ago, and, you know, taught for a little while after that, and just kind of seeing those you know, more of that checklist, right? And can be looked as a, it can be looked at as a got you, or a, you know, did I see it that one time I was in your classroom, right?
Right.
And, you know, and that's kind of one of my, you know, pet peeves is like, you know, is a principal, you know, especially if they aren't able to get into the classrooms or they don't have that practice of getting into the classrooms that often, you know, the teacher will put on that dog and pony show,
right?
That scheduled observation time. And, right. And then, you know, then sometimes the evaluator will then say, well, I didn't see X, Y, Z. Well, you know, that one time you were in the classroom, you know, that wasn't,
you correct.
Know, I do that other days, right? That's something right. that's, it's just, yeah, I think my strong opinion is, you know, try to get into the classroom, like you're saying, even the virtual classes you and your deans are
mm-hmm.
very often, and having those coaching conversations. I think that's where leaders need to start, right? If they haven't already this year, is just having those informal check-ins and just kind of reflection conversations with their teachers. And then, you know, when it comes time to fill out those evaluations and those summatives,
yeah.
then you're not scrambling to think of, okay, what did I see in so-and-so's classroom?
Correct.
Right? And you're having,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have to get in there, because mm-hmm. if you don't, people know that.
Yeah.
Your evaluations come off as, you know, like a teacher will know if you haven't been yeah. in there and you just wrote it based off one observation. And I get so much more out of the conversations. And if I get to the point where I have to write an evaluation and I feel like I don't know enough to write, then I don't write it, because mm-hmm. I'm not going to write a fake evaluation for someone when they know. And so do I. And that's how they're judged. And if I haven't been there enough to make that assessment, mm-hmm. I'm not going to do something just for that reason. So I think, and in the meantime, if you are in there, quite honestly, a lot. Mm-hmm. It might be a little uncomfortable at first because it's a new thing. And staff sometimes wonder, like, why is he or she in my room so much? But they start to look forward to it and value it. And you have these great conversations with teachers. They feel like you're invested in them. You want to know how things are going. Mm-hmm. You start to see, I love just seeing the kids in the, like, going into the classrooms, even virtually, is the thing that gets me through the days, because yeah. I get to see kids, whereas my job is so different now. I don't get that experience every day. So it's kind of bucket filling as well. I just think there's so many positive benefits. And how can we lead during remote or hybrid? How can we lead if we're not there?
Yeah.
We can't. So it's just, it's so important. And I make time in my schedule every week, and I don't move it. I don't shift it. That's my coaching time. And so I don't let the compliance stuff take priority. I let the important stuff that changes practice and supports teachers take mm-hmm. priority. And I think yeah. sometimes you get caught up in the other stuff takes precedence, which, you know, I understand.
There's always going to be paperwork to do.
Right. Yeah. It never goes away. You know, I think the state is pretty used to getting my stuff late. It's just the way it is. But I also back that up with, I feel good about the reasons it's late, because I'm doing the really important work, which is being in classrooms, having conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, but I understand also that it's a balancing act, and it's hard. We wear lots of hats and we have obligations that we have to uphold, but I try not to let those things get in the way of the things that matter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think it goes a long way for the students as well, because if they see you in those classrooms virtually or in person, you know, they get to know you better as a leader. They see that you're visible as opposed mm-hmm. to just somebody who's maybe in the cafeteria or just, you know, at the door when school starts. And then they have no idea where the principal is otherwise. So, you know, it's so important. And I think there are more leaders that are making that shift in recent years. However, I think there are leaders that have maybe been a principal for 10, 15 years. And, you know, it's kind of that gradual shift, right? And it's just taking on that new practice. And I hope during this pandemic, whatever their model looks like, that there are more have these feedback conversations and these just kind of walkthroughs, right? Walkthroughs, I think are great. And I remember once when I was a department chair and the admin team would do walkthroughs of departments, and then they would share that out with the whole staff, what they saw in such and such department. So,
I mean, and I said it to you in the bio, but the thing that changed my career as a leader was getting connected on social media. So I would just highly recommend that anyone out there, if you're a young principal or a new leader, connect with people on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, follow Principals in Action. That was the group that saved me in the principalship because they gave me permission to get out and do the things that mattered and not do the things I thought I had to do, which was the paperwork, the budgets. And this group of people just inspired me to be different and do the things I knew I wanted to do, but just, I needed permission to say, oh, there's other principals out there like me, so it's okay. So I would just highly encourage anyone to get out there and follow those hashtags. And, cause that in itself is just the best kind of professional development.
Yeah, and I agree. And that's how we found each other. And that's how I found a lot of my guests for the podcast. And, you know, I think, and, you know, we're all across the US and in Canada. And, you know, I think just learning from people in different states and, you know, different also paths that they're on. Very experienced and just, you know, something I didn't really get on Twitter until about 3.5 years ago. And I, you know, it was kind of just, you know, I didn't want to spend more time on social media, but then you see the benefits and, you know, you only have to connect with educators. Right. And you can, you connect with, right. So, it's definitely that, it's a type of PD. I think we said in the pre-chat that, it's becoming more and more, the PD that people get, I would say informally, right? But you hear a lot about webinars and conferences as well from those groups that you're on and people you're connecting. Well,
yeah. And I have teachers right now that are, you know, we're offering PD obviously, but, you know, I'm hearing my teacher saying the real things that are changing their practice are things that they're seeing on Facebook. They're part of these groups. Of teachers, they're on TikTok and they see teachers doing things and go, I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
We can't ignore or discount that as professional development. In fact, I would argue that it's the best kind. It's collaborative. It's, I saw you do this. I want to do that. That's the stuff where you change what you do the next day, as opposed to, you know, standard sit and get. Because I do think the adults, the leaders, we need to rethink professional development also in a more personalized way, but that's probably a whole nother podcast. but yeah, professional development, adult learning is needs to be better than it is.
Yeah. And I've spoken about that at a few virtual conferences, since the summer, just kind of developing your own PD niche. Right. And I included people on Twitter to follow and authors to, you know, get in book clubs. There's a lot of these virtual book clubs, especially with Corwin going on. And, you know, so I think, you know, when professionals just got to decide what works for them and what are those, areas that they want to learn more about, so much better than having that sit and get whole staff PD that's so often been the case.
Yeah. Because it's like a classroom. You have half, you know, half the class already knows it. So they've checked out and they're thinking, why am I sitting here? You have some people that need it, but they're a small group. And then you have other people that need it, but don't want it. I think about that as, you know, like, just like a classroom. You know, we tell teachers to differentiate, but leaders don't differentiate the learning for them. So, you know, I do think it's really important that we provide multiple pathways and multiple ways for teachers to really get what they need. Because all of our teachers are on this, you know, learning is a paradigm and, you know, and you're on a continuum, right? So like all of my teachers are on a different place right now in their learning experience. So we have to treat it as such when we think about professional development.
Yeah, I so much agree. So kind of out of everything we've talked about with both the PD and the evaluations and the personalized learning, best case scenario, how would you like to end the school year in just kind of with kind of things that you've seen shift over this, what have we been, three months maybe for you all in the school year?
Well, I'd be the first to say I would love us to end the year in person. I'm the first person who will tell you that this is not what we want to be doing, mm-hmm. but it is what it is, and we're making the best of it. But I would love the day when we are able to get back in person, because there is so much to be said about being together physically. So I would love us to end the year that way. I would love us to celebrate, do a lot of celebrating on all the challenges, struggles, and successes from the year. Mm-hmm. And not just with staff, but with kids too. Because I think we miss that. I spend a lot of time taking care of staff and hearing them and trying to support them, that we have to remember that this is hard for kids too. Mm-hmm. And so really doing a lot of that celebrating with them and really honoring that all that they have overcome. Because we can't ignore the fact that this has been hard, and we shouldn't ignore it. But we can also recognize it and say, look what we accomplished. Look at how close of a look at the community we've built through all of this. We're going to be better together after this, because we've been through this together. And so I'm hopeful that my staff culture improves, just because, you know, sometimes you go through tough times together, it makes you stronger. Mm-hmm. I'm hopeful also that we capture all of what we learned this year, mm-hmm. and apply that to our future practice. I don't want us to go, if we're back in person next fall, I would hate to think we're going back to school as usual. Mm-hmm. I get that. I think that's a natural thing that we do, because as humans, we want to go back to what we knew and what was comfortable. Yeah. But I think we need to think about, okay, how is this going to affect how we operate moving forward? What are the elements of remote learning or personalized learning that we want to keep and preserve? Mm-hmm. So I would hope that we would capture those two. I also, last thing is, I just want to capture all the funny moments in remote learning. It sounds silly, but I was saying to my dean today, this is a time marker in your life and career. There's going to be before COVID and after. Mm-hmm. And I know it's hard and I know it's rough, but there are some really funny things happening every day in your life that you're never going to want to forget. Mm-hmm. So capture them somehow. Mm-hmm. Write them down. Write down the story of the kid that was eating a box of corn dogs during your math lesson. Eat the cats and the animals and all the things. Like, I want teachers to remember, because you will. I told them recently, I know it's not funny now, but someday you're going to look back and go, that was, you know, there were times there that just, you're going to look back and laugh, and you're going to say, man, we made it through that and we're okay.
And, you know, I can think of just some experiences that I've had, and it's like, you want to capture that. And, you know, you try to push aside, you know, the negative of what we're going through right now. But then, like you're saying, it is, we have that pre and post COVID in our careers, like, kind of, in the same point, kind of mid career, and just to kind of look back and see what we learned and gained from this experience, right. Mm-hmm. That there are silver linings.
And it will be okay. Yeah. You know, it doesn't feel like it now, but it'll be okay. And we'll all be okay. And we'll be better on the other side of it. And we just have to keep remembering that, even in the really tough times where we're thinking this is never going to end. Because I do feel like one of my fears is that we lose people through this, like we lose educators because mm-hmm. this is so hard. And we really have to do a better job of keeping them, protecting them, and mm-hmm. keeping them feeling good about what they're doing. Because if we don't, my fear is the profession the profession suffers. And I do worry about that. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, out of everything we discussed today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
I would love listeners to remember that it will be okay, and to keep breathing, mm-hmm. Control what you can control, and it will be okay. and try to maintain as much positivity as you can, and just be genuine about this and the reality of it. Because I think we have to identify that this is really hard. No one knows the right answer. And just do the best you can every day. And that's all you can do. That's all anyone can expect that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so important for educators to just, you know, not beat themselves up if a lesson doesn't go perfectly, and just know, yeah, like you said, they're doing the best they can despite the circumstances, and it's going to be okay. And, you know, we're all learning. So where can people connect with you and find you online?
So you can connect with me at Principal Dodge One on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm there pretty frequently. We have a school Facebook page. If anyone's interested, we post lots of positive things happening. You can just go to Facebook and search Every Child Every Day One. That will get you to our Facebook page. And that's just if you want to see what our school's up to, and communications that we're providing to our families. I also have a blog, and it's OES, blogspot, OES Lead Learner, or some version of that. I haven't been doing a good job of posting there, but I'm going to try to get back to writing at some point soon. And my email is christopherdodge@orange-elem. You can always email me, or I'm on Voxer, which is a great tool if anyone hasn't given it a shot. It's a walkie-talkie app. My username there is cdodge33. You can always send me a voice message, and we can chat on Voxer. I love doing that as well.
Great. Well, it's been great talking with you today and reflecting on our learnings throughout this pandemic time, and, you know, kind of what you would like to see happen in the future. And, you know, I hope the listeners really get a lot out of this conversation we had. So thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast.
Thanks, Dana. I appreciate you bringing me on.